In her first novel, Crazy Horse's Girlfriend, Erica Wirth brings her experience growing up as an Apache Chickasaw Cherokee to a gritty but also tender portrayal of a young Native American woman fighting against her surroundings. The novel is centered around Marguerite, a sharp-tongued, drug-dealing 16-year-old in a town crippled by poverty, unemployment, and drug abuse. Wirth teaches creative writing at Western Illinois University and has been a guest writer at the Institute for American Indian Arts. She also writes a column in the Weekly Alibi. Marguerite, your main character, is Apache, Chickasaw, Cherokee, and white. She's 16. She's smart. She likes to read. She doesn't like school. She deals pot with her cousin, Jake, to raise enough money to get away from their small town. She lives in a family plagued by alcoholism and domestic violence. How much of you is in Marguerite?
I write in a 500-mile radius around myself. And so I was a tremendous dork. Like, I did read. I totally read Stephen King. I totally read, you know, sci-fi and mainly fantasy. So that part's autobiographical. But I didn't have this thing called friends that Marguerite has, you know. So, and I certainly did not do drugs or drink or anything like that in high school. I mainly sat under the display case at lunch hoping to get the bullies wouldn't find me. You know.
Where did you grow up? Did you grow up in Idaho Springs?
Right outside, basically Denver. West of that is Evergreen, which has slowly become incredibly yuppie. And then west of that is Idaho Springs, which is also looks like Aspen now when you go downtown. But I grew up in the mountains, like in between them. And so I was bused to Idaho Springs for school. And, you know, at the time, and it still is in ways, and so is Evergreen, and still is in ways, it was a tough little place. The people were tough. Mm. And I did not have a mullet. I had all of my teeth. I did not have a baby. And so I was not well liked.
Really?
So, oh, yeah. I was like, you know how they're like in high school, they're like popular people and people in between and then like nerds. And then like there are two or three people that you're like, oh, my God, I'm so glad I'm not that guy. There was me, a guy who was mentally handicapped, and a guy named Chipper Puttfark. And his name was literally that. And he would always try to make friends with me. And I'd be like, no way, dude. We get beat up enough alone. If we're together, we'll die.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I was going to say, you know, I haven't been to Idaho Springs. I looked at it online. I'm like, this cutesy, historic downtown. But the image you paint of it is really dark.
Yes.
It's a hard place.
Yes. Well, in the 80s, there still is a large trailer park. And I think, you know, people are ready to pronounce on people who live in trailers. But, you know, they're affordable. When I was growing up, there was Bojo started to become popular as a destination to stop on the way to the ski resorts. But, you know, the main street was not revitalized. It was like, you know, thrift stores and, you know, things that you'd see in the 80s and early 90s in a small broken down town. And Colorado wasn't really a destination yet for Californians and New Yorkers. You know, Denver was not a big, wow, go there city. You know,
yeah.
So, I mean, it was tough and people were generally working class or poor or, like my main character, working middle. So,
in your notes at the end of the book, it said you took, is it 11 years to finish this?
Yeah.
Talk about that process. Were there times you just wanted to abandon?
Burn, I think would be the word, just burn it. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I wrote the story when I was 24 and it was sort of a voice-based story. And, you know, as a kid who read mainly like genre literature, most of that is in third person. And so that's what I was always writing in. And then suddenly I thought, I don't know why, I just started writing in first person in this voice. And I realized that a lot of people where I came from had really interesting ways of expressing themselves. And they were funny and interesting and dynamic. And so I started writing in first person. I wrote this short story. And someone said, oh, you should make this into a novel. And I was like, there is no way I can do 300 pages with this person.
Really?
And then I realized they were right. And I probably softened her up a bit. I think she's tougher in the original short story. She's younger in the original story. And you know how defensive you are when you're 15. This character is about 16. And so I think she's more mature. But, yeah, it took me 10 years because, you know, agents or presses will talk a lot about narrative arc. Mm-hmm. And you're like, what does this even mean, narrative arc? And what it essentially means is sustaining a story that has structure, right, over 80,000 words. And that was rough for me. I rewrote it 100 times, a billion times. And finally, the last time I was here, I was a visiting writer at the Institute of American Indian Arts, and I was, like, collapsing under graduate school debt, and I was poor, and I was going insane, and I was lonely, and it was wonderful because I was watching The Truman Show, and I was on the exercise bike. I don't know why this revelation happened at that time, where I just suddenly realized, I'm just going to dump it, and I'm going to have this structure, And the structure really came to me, and that was the most important revision. That was about 6 years ago. And then I continued to rewrite and to tighten it. But that was hard.
It's interesting you say, I can't spend 300 pages with this person. Yeah. Because when I first picked it up, started reading it, I mean, it opens with a drug deal gone bad. And it's dark, it's kind of ugly, and I was reading, I'm like, I don't know if I like these people. I don't know if I want to spend the rest of this book. By the time I got to the end of it, I was rooting for them. I had so much more compassion for them.
Yeah.
By the time I got to the end. And I thought that was really interesting. I thought about it today while I was driving around. And then I saw people walking on Central while I was driving downtown. And we have a lot of Native Americans who come here who are on the streets on Central. Yeah. And I started to see your characters. Well, I looked at them and I was like, everybody has these amazing stories that we don't know.
Yeah.
So I applaud. I mean, somehow you pulled that off.
Thanks,
through those 300 plus pages.
I think I'm really interested in that because I'm interested in the different ways I've been looked at, or my family's been looked at, or my community has been looked at. And it's so weird with Native people. I have an article in The Alibi just as of yesterday about Albuquerque. And it's like this place where there are, I think, 30,000 Native people of all tribes, all kinds. It's very art. Like, the reason why I lived here last year is because as a Native artist, this is like the place to be and date, theoretically. And so I was here and I know loads of different kinds of people, but there's a sense of like there are traditional good Indians who do traditional things, like you go to see them dance on a res, and then there are these guys on Central, and they're bad. And I'm like, everybody has a story that is not, you know, just those two things. And and even those people on Central, they have long stories. My book of poetry, actually, I have all these series of prose poems that are portraits of a lot of them, because I would sit down and talk to them, because they would be like, hey, sister, you know, have you a dollar, you know? And so we'd talk. And there was one guy I met in Boulder, Colorado, who was half Navajo and half Chippewa. He had a master's degree. He was fluent in three languages.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was he living on the streets?
Yep. Wow. Yep. He tried to convince me to put coconut oil in my hair, and I took one for the team. I put a little one. I did.
And we'll say, if you can't see her, she has lovely hair.
Thanks, Jade.
So despite the pretty hard lives your characters lead in the book, you also give us this sense of beauty and hope underneath it all, sort of little moments or revelations that they have. Talk about that.
Well, you know, they're human beings, you know, and I think human beings do, thank goodness, get to have hope and joy even in the worst parts of their lives. My one part that's also autobiographical in the novels, my father was an alcoholic and, you know, it was rough. But he also, I would not be a writer if it weren't for my dad. You know what he read to me? Lewis L'Amour and the Martian Chronicles.
Oh.
And my mom was like, Ron, she's not going to understand that stuff. And I, you know, Erica, what did just happen? I'd be like, well, the aliens just jumped really high to get to this guy because he didn't like that lady, you know. And I loved that stuff. So that's a joyful thing about, you know, my dad. And I think it's important to me to give compassion, like you're saying, to human beings, like we, you know, to give a fully rounded story. And, you know, of course, there's language. Like, I had a really tough time negotiating a first-person point of view perspective of a young, like, Native chick in a tough little town who's 16, and then also trying to make the language evocative or poetic at times without losing, mm-hmm. like, her voice.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think sometimes I achieve that, even in the darker parts, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think. We'll see.
If you're just joining us, this is Women's Focus on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick, and I'm speaking with Erica Wirth about her first novel, Crazy Horse's Girlfriend. Talk about the title. It's not your main character.
I know. Isn't that tricky?
It's this
That's
other
so
guy
tricky.
Named Will. He's,
you know,
a really dark character in the book.
People completely ignore the fact that I have a gay Lakota guy in my book. And it's almost like do you know how many like cool gay Native dudes like I've known in my life? It's just weird to me. It's almost like it's not part of the vision of Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's this, there are just so many interesting people. That was sort of based off of a person I knew. I'm not a very good person in terms of titles, so I'm a lifter. And so I in the original short story, when the main character says something sarcastic about, you know, he ain't no crazy horse, maybe crazy horse's girlfriend, you know, that was something that I lifted because I thought, oh, this works for the actual book itself. But then I also thought, like, it displays the homophobia that we all have that permeates so many cultures. And I think for Native people, traditionally, you know, there's a very different perspective on alternative, you know, we wouldn't even call it alternative, on sexuality. There wasn't this persecution of people for having a variety of sexualities. And so to me, the irony of somebody who has to go home or anywhere else with his family and suffer through really tremendous homophobia, and I'm not making a pronouncement on any family, any mm-hmm. tribe, anything like that, but it exists because human beings, unfortunately, in this culture, our larger culture, are homophobic. Mm-hmm. And to have to suffer through that and then experience racism in other places because he's, you know, he's completely Native must have been crushing. And that's kind of what I tried to express. Like, he's a dark character. He's probably the darkest because he's had to suffer the most. And he doesn't know how to get out of it except to be kind of funny and mean. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I was trying to do with that particular character.
Even though, you know, he's so problematic because, I mean, there's a lot of prejudice towards him, like from his own tribe. That's why he left Pine Ridge. And his relationship with Marguerite is really complicated. So he could evoke sympathy because he's been treated so horribly, but then he treats those around him really horribly as well. And in your throughout your book, Marguerite tries to find this balance between having compassion for people who are in really difficult situations while also acknowledging that sometimes in part their own decisions put them there, in part, not totally. Sure. So she tries to have this compassion but not get pulled into their worlds. Mm-hmm. Why did you want to explore that?
You know, I think because we all struggle with that. It's we all struggle with trying to figure out where, you know, our boundaries have to be. I think I also wanted to – I mean, one of my favorite writers is Richard Wright, and he was very popular in Toll. It was an interesting history. Basically, you know, Native Son mm-hmm. is about Bigger Thomas. And Bigger Thomas is a regular guy. He's just a regular guy who's swept up into completely exceptional circumstances under which he essentially fails. But in that failure, because Richard Wright was an existentialist, he learns who he is before he dies, because he's sentenced to die, really. And, you know, it's interesting because he's a thoroughly unlikable character. And people always talk about relatability and whether they like a character. I'm kind of a fan of, you know, Dostoevsky, Richard Wright. And so I kind of like these failed villainous characters because I want to know. I think people want to make pronouncements about, well, they just have to take responsibility for themselves and they just have to do this and they just have to do that. So it's a way of getting away from the larger issues of like homophobia, racism, you know, sexism. When you look at really crushed human beings, you usually do see a person who's been crushed under so much. But my main character, you know, she's 16. So she only can do and only knows so much. And so she's always in, and she's in her own pile of crap. So I think she's always trying to survive that crap. And I think so in the end, she realizes it's not loving to help people when you're reinforcing their not loving behavior. I guess maybe that's a way to put it badly.
This is Women's Focus on KUNM, and I'm Megan Kamrick. And you're listening to an interview I did with Erica Wirth about her first novel, Crazy Horse's Girlfriend. Well, one of the recurring themes throughout the book is how incredibly difficult it is to change. To break out of ingrained patterns like alcoholism or domestic violence or drug addiction. Talk about that, because when you construct a narrative as a writer, you try to create momentum and a narrative arc. But for so many of these characters, there's no momentum.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that's really excruciating. You know, I tell my students a lot, you know, because I teach creative writing, like, you know, the story, the climate. I'm really interested in internal conflict and stories. Generally, you see things where students are just like, they drop helicopters in that blow up. You know, people die for no reason.
It's because they've been watching Michael Bay movies.
Exactly. They're just watching so much television. And so they try to make the plot come in from above. And I'm like, you know, you have to put people under pressure. And then you have to make it so one of their greatest pressures or fears sort of comes to them. And that's definitely, I think, what happens for my main character. But I think the sad part is most of the time, in my opinion, that's what's so great about so much literature. When you read it, wherever it's coming from, whatever genre it is, when you see that nothing's going to change, but something's changed inside a person, even if they're not going to change, they kind of know it. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to change. And I think that's most people. It's very hard to move away from your circumstances. It's very hard to, you know, beat inertia.
And there are very few decent men in the book, aside from Marguerite's cousin Jake.
He's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she finally finds support and strength really in other women.
Yeah.
Not always, but
right.
None of the relationships are perfect.
No. You're totally right, because I think at home that's kind of how it was. And dudes are great, you know, they're human beings too. But, you know, in our culture, women are under, I think, more pressure to kind of conform to so much that I think ultimately the other side, the flip side of that, is that if they can get away from it they can sort of like see what they have in common, there is support. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jake is there, I think, because, you know, he's modeled after my own awesome cousin who has, you know, his problems, but he's a human being. He's a very interesting, funny, smart human being. You know, I wanted to show that. And even, you know, the main character's love interest, I think, is complicated. He wants to be better than he is. Even the father, who's a mess, will say, you need to make your life better, you know. So he does love her. He's just kind of a mess. So
you bring up her boyfriend, Mike, and he's interesting because he is different in that he's always had materially everything he wants, but he's just as lost as some of the teenagers in this town who really don't have anything or in poverty. He's searching for some kind of meaning in his life and love and acceptance. So it's interesting that you show that you can have all the material wealth in the world. That doesn't necessarily mean you're happy or fulfilled.
No, and he was sort of modeled after somebody I dated a long time ago who was just physically gorgeous, Native guy. And it's funny because people want to say, well, he's not Native American. And I understand, like, boy, is that a complicated, miserable issue in Indian country. And I'm not even going to go there. But I don't see that. He's a lost bird is what we call it. He's adopted out. And I knew someone a long time ago that I dated who he was brilliant, funny, smart, adopted out. He's Colombian Indian, like my main character's love interest. And he just, his parents wanted him to be white so badly that he would say things like, and he was not very white looking, and he would say things like, you know, some people think I'm white, and I'd be like, blind people? You know, I mean, there was just no way. But he couldn't reconcile, because I think in our culture, what Native American is so weird. You know, it's like the stuff on TV, and it's always like stuff you learn in books and as a kid. So he couldn't reconcile his own identity with Native American. And finally, over the years, he was like, I'm Native American. Oh, my God. And he was actually trying to connect, but he was also a huge risk taker. And he decided to climb Mount Rainier without a permit. And he died a number of years ago.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it was heartbreaking.
Wow.
But that was what he was going to do.
Well, one of the overriding themes is getting out of Idaho Springs, getting out of bad situations, getting out of a hopeless future. And Marguerite is determined not to end up with a child on welfare. She does at the end of the book, but we get a sense that isn't the end of the story for her. It's a little ambiguous. Mm-hmm. Will she get out?
I think, you know what, here was the big impetus for me. I struggled for a long time because it seemed like Native writers were writing, and I am a huge fan of Sherman Alexie, Louis Erdrich, James Welch, and then the plethora of lovely, lovely poets that are out there. But I noticed, and then there's, you know, Eddie Chugalade, Tony Jensen. I mean, there's so many great ones. And the newer ones aren't like this, Tony and Eddie. But overall, there is either, you know, I'm Native, but I'm not from a res. I have to find who I am on a reservation. Or, you know, the author would be like, set all of her characters on a reservation anyway. Or it would be like, I'm from a res and I got to get off. And I was like, what about living, finding that there are ways that struggle can be more internal? Like, economy is one thing. Like, you can't get a job, you can't get a job. You can't live happily where you're from, you can't. But I think for my character, I wanted to show that Denver and the outlying areas also has, like Albuquerque, a gigantic Native population. And, you know, people have said, oh, she's so distant from her Native heritage, which cracks me up because I don't see that in the book at all. Like, they speak Lakota, they speak Navajo. You'll hear that in Denver. You'll hear Chippewa or Ojibwe, you call it, and, you know, which sounds like Welsh, you know, but, and their Native American church, powwow, everything. And so I wanted to show somebody in an organic environment that I could recognize who actually finds that she needs to say, okay, what is a good way inside myself to have a happy ending without just getting off, getting away. And mm-hmm. so I want to do something different from that, those two narratives that I was talking about.
I have a sense maybe you want to continue her story. Do you know yet?
You know, Sandra Cisneros is like the most supportive writer I've ever worked with. Like, she's so sweet. She's blurbed my first book. She blurbed this book. She line edited for me. And this is Sandra freaking Cisneros. Like, she's so nice. And she wanted me to take out all the dirty words and make it into a YA series. And I can see why.
Young adult.
Because, yeah, mm-hmm. because I think my guess is that it's, you know, she just felt it was compelling. It was interesting. And that, you know, the story could continue. But, you know, I like doing new things. And so I'm kind of working on a new novel now about Native gangs. And so I think that it's one of those things like Catcher in the Rye where it's meant to feel like there's life outside of the pages. Or I hope I gave it life outside of the pages.
I totally had that feeling at the end. I felt she could go either way.
Yeah.
You know, I'm rooting for her to find her dreams.
Right.
And I realized after reading the whole book, that might not happen. So it was a very real and ambiguous ending.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Like I said, didn't get that PhD for nothing. That's what they train you. You know, you want to make someone read the book again? Ambiguous ending, you know?
Well, Erica, it's been so fun talking to you. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
If you're just joining us, this is Women's Focus on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick, and I'm speaking with Erica Wirth about her first novel, Crazy Horse's Girlfriend. This is Women's Focus on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick, and you're listening to an interview I did with Erica Wirth about her first novel, Crazy Horse's Girlfriend. This is Women's Focus on KUNM, and I'm Megan Kamrick, and this is an interview I recorded with Erica Wirth, author of the... This is Women's Focus on KUNM, and I'm Megan Kamrick, and you're listening to an interview I did with Erica Wirth about her first novel, Crazy Horse's Girlfriend. Erica Wirth's first novel is Crazy Horse's Girlfriend. Wirth teaches creative writing at Western Illinois University and has been a guest writer at the Institute for American Indian Arts in Santa Fe. She also writes for the Weekly Alibi here in Albuquerque. For Women's Focus, I'm Megan Kamrick.